Okay, if everyone could take their seat, we're about ready to get started. We wish to extend a warm welcome to everyone, particularly our scouts tonight, and thankful to have you here with us. We want to recognize every member of our council who's present tonight and appreciate their attendance. We'd like to begin with a flag ceremony under the direction of Troop 774, Carlos Padilla. So, Carlos, if you'll come forward.
Color Guard, attention. Color Guard, forward march. Will the audience please rise? Color Guard, halt. Color Guard, show the colors of the United States of America and of the state of Utah. Will the audience please recite the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Two. Color Guard, post the colors. Color Guard, return to ranks. Color Guard, dismiss. The audience may be seated.
Okay, we appreciate this troop conducting a very important part of our meeting. Thank you. I see some other troops here. If you'd like to stand up and introduce yourselves, and just with a very loud voice, just to explain. And you're get what are you here for? Are you getting a okay, awesome. Thank you. Okay. Anybody else? We got some Cub Scouts right here. Someone like to stand up and introduce yourself? Wonderful. Thank you. Okay. And 774, do you want to introduce yourself? You're close by here. That's what I heard. Okay.
We're 774.
Wonderful. It's good to have you here with us. And you're, are you here for a mayor badge also? Just. Awesome. It's great to have you. Okay, is there a troop behind us? 774? Who's going to stand up? Is it all 774 there? Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Thank you so much. Again, it's wonderful to have you here with us. Any council recognitions tonight? Okay. Just a couple I'd like to make mention of. We want to extend our condolences to Officers Holloway, Green, and Ricky, who unfortunately passed away from our UPD family, and we extend our condolences to their family. We also have one of our staff members, Shauna DeCorver, her husband passed away, and extend our love and best wishes to them in this most difficult time. I wanted just to report and recognize that our new elementary school was named Bastion Elementary. That property was donated by the Bastion family and will be so recognized for their donation. Okay, we'll go into our public portion of our meeting. Let me just read this. I may. Audience members may bring any item to the mayor and council's attention. Comments will be limited to 2 minutes. State law prohibits the council from acting on items that do not appear on the agenda. And just as a reminder, when you come, please don't come expecting that we'll engage in a dialogue. This is an opportunity for you to express any concern you'd like to, and we will direct you to staff or other avenues that might assist you in the concerns that you present. So, that being said, I have two comment forms presented, and we'll first hear from Caitlin O'Brook. Caitlin, if you'll come forward and State your name.
My name is Caitlin O'Rourke, and I just wanted to say that I think this is very important to crossing signal. I think it's very important because I was crossing the crosswalk one time and a car almost hit me and my friend, so I think it's very important we have this so children crossing the crosswalk can be safe.
And this is, I think, out by Copper Mountain. What's that?
Item 7.
Okay. Gotcha.
Copper Mountain.
Okay. Sorry, I messed up your name. It's O'Rourke. O'Rourke? Okay. Sorry.
Thank you, Caitlin.
I didn't do very good in English, so. Okay. David Howell?
Thank you, Mayor, members of the City Council. My name is David Howe. I live at 5553 West Dorton Court in Harriman. I achieved the rank of Star Scout 40-some-odd years ago. This is a one-gallon gasoline container, never used, new, and empty. Had it been filled with gasoline, I would not have been allowed to bring it through the front doors into this room due to the noxious and toxic fumes, as well as gasoline's unstable and highly combustible nature. Those front doors are approximately 45 feet away from where you are now seated. That's not a very long distance to those doors. Yet the Harriman City Planning Commission recently approved a gas station to be located 45 feet away from the outside walls of the homes of the Silvercrest townhome community. Unless there is a judicial overturn of the Planning Commission's decision, in just a few short months, my neighbors will see their lifestyles upended by a gas station that will be open from 4 in the morning until 11 at night, will be exposed to toxic and known cancer-causing gasoline fumes, will see their property values decimated, and let's be honest here, will more than likely never be able to sell their homes, for who among us would knowingly purchase a $250,000 townhome with a gas station located 45 feet from the living room window? The answer, no one. Before I purchased my townhome in the Silvercrest neighborhood, I noticed there was a strip of land to the south of the Silvercrest neighborhood bordering Harriman Main Street. I inquired as to what type of buildings or businesses could be occupied that land in the future and asked specifically about a gas station. I was told that the land in question was in an MU2 zone and that the types of businesses in an M2U zone prohibited a gas station. One of my soon-to-be neighbors called the Harriman Planning Department and another personally visited. Both were told the same. No gas station would ever be built there. Subsequently, I received a copy of the MU2 zone language, and under an all capitalized and bold heading that reads prohibited uses is a list of forbidden businesses including service or gas stations. What I failed to read carefully were a few words offset by commas that gave the Planning Commission essentially carte blanche over the types of businesses allowed in an MU2 zone. Through your honorable colleague, Coralie Moser, I have submitted for the Council's consideration 5 proposed ordinances so that in the future, neighborhoods in an MU2 zone will not be devastated and defaced by a gas station. I recognize that perhaps only 2 of my proposed ordinances may provide my Silvercrest neighborhood with relief, but this is not about just today. You can read the ordinances, you have a copy in front of you, and determine if they are worthy of consideration and implementation. Perhaps my request to mirror South Jordan's 300-foot rule is too aggressive. I would be more than happy if the Council adopted an ordinance that recognizes the existing average in this city of 125 feet from the back of a gas station convenience store building to the nearest home residence. I thank you for your consideration. I do request that the Council ask the City Attorney to direct the Planning Commission to postpone its review of the gas station's beer and alcohol beverage sales license application during the Commission's March 2nd meeting. Due to the fact that my fifth proposed ordinance would ban beer and alcoholic beverage sales, also including tobacco product sales, by a business located within 1,000 feet of a school. The gas station is less than 600 feet from Silvercrest Elementary. Thank you for your consideration.
Thanks, David. I had just those two forms. Are there any others who would like to come and make a public comment? Certainly welcome to. Okay, seeing none, we'll close our public comment portion of our meeting and go on to Mayor and Council Committee reports. Thinking about it. I just wanted to mention we have the Night of Heroes March 10th from 6 to 8:30 at UFA Station. That is to recognize particular individuals in law enforcement, fire, and other agencies that have demonstrated great courageous and heroic events in their life. So I'd invite Corley and I will be in Logan that night, I think, won't we? So we will not be able to attend, but certainly I'd invite any of the council. It's a great event and, again, helps to highlight individuals in our community and broader community that have demonstrated great contributions. And then I just wanted to make you aware of a Wasatch Front workshop March 27th from 4 to 6 at Riverton Town Hall. This will come together to where we offer input for the strategic plan for 2050 in terms of transportation needs. So I am planning on attending that. We'll have staff there, but you're certainly welcome to come and offer any input you'd like to make. So, okay.
Mayor, I'll make just one quick comment regarding the Harriman CDA presentation to the Unified Fire Service Area. The staff did a great job presenting that yesterday. Because Unified Fire Service Area is still in the process of seeking legal counsel, they have opted to, and we knew this would happen, but we've opted to postpone the action on that item until March so that legal counsel can review those documents and provide the district with the advice on that. So, but staff made the presentation. They received some good feedback from the district board, and they'll be providing a few more answers at the next meeting.
Wonderful. Did you want to mention about the Meet the Chief? That's on what, March 3rd?
Oh, sure. Well, the new fire chief, Unified Fire Authority Fire Chief Dan Peterson, will be taking his oath of office at 7 p.m. at the Harriman Station 123. So that's open to the public if you wish to attend, and we're excited to have him on board.
That's March the 3rd, I think.
Friday, March 3rd, correct.
Anyone else? Okay. We'll go on to our reports and presentations. We have a presentation by the Utah Municipal Clerks Association. Is that Lee? Is that Lee Ann Hornuck? And she is the Ephraim recorder. Did you drive clear up here from Ephraim?
I did.
Wish I had you bring a couple of turkeys with you or something from now.
If I'd known in advance.
No, we appreciate you coming so far. Who's your companion there tonight?
This is Kim Reed. She is the deputy reporter in Clearfield. She's also
awesome.
On our UFCA board.
Well, wonderful. Thank you. You've made an extraordinary effort to be here, and we appreciate you being here. So.
Thank you. I'd like to thank you for letting us be here. We're here tonight to honor your city recorder, Jackie Nostrom. I have to use my paper here. I get a little bit nervous. Jackie has done all of the things necessary to achieve her MMC, which is a Master Municipal Clerk certification. And that is coming through the International Institute of Municipal Clerks, whom we work in conjunction with to provide educational opportunities for the reporters and deputies for them to get their education. Before Jackie got her her MMC, she had to do all of the requirements for a CMC, which is a Certified Municipal Clerk. That's a very rigorous ordeal. We equate that to getting a bachelor's degree. It requires several hundred hours of class time, a lot of professional points, time to earn those points. once she has got her CMC, then she goes on and does the same thing again on a little bit higher level for her master, which she has now. We have approximately 250 cities in the state. I know there are a couple of new towns, so I'm not exactly sure of the number anymore. But UMCA has 261 members, with approximately 85 who have achieved the CMC, and 34, like Jackie, who have gone on to get their Master Municipal Clerk certification. So she really is an elite group. She's done a lot of work, and I know we at UMCA are very proud of her. She's served on a lot of our committees, and I have to say that last year she almost single-handedly chaired all of our committees, and she has done a lot of work for the UMCA, as I'm sure she's done for your city. But she couldn't have achieved this certification without your support. And again, we want to thank you for that. You're sending her to these trainings and conferences, and allowing her to do this is a great benefit for you, as well as herself and the UMCA. So we would like to present Jackie with her Master Municipal Clerk plaque and a gift from the UMCA. If she would come forward, we'd like to get a picture, if that's all right with you.
Can we come down and join you?
We would love that.
Jackie, do you want to say a few words?
She just did.
A few. I saw some other scouts in the very back there. Do you from a different troop? Right there. Blonde. You just move over. You don't like those guys over there. Okay.
So if they came late, it doesn't count.
They didn't.
Okay. We have a public hearing portion of our meeting. Item 5.1. Public hearing and consideration of a resolution to amend the Harriman City 2016-17 fiscal year budget. Alan Ray, do you have any comment?
Here, go back one. We have just a short one here today. We've got two items on the general fund. One is to increase the salaries and wages amount in our building department by $60,000. This is to help them deal with the additional permits that are coming in this year. Presumably, we'll get enough here to replace this, and we've been doing very well so far this year. The other one is to put a hot light system on 5600 West for a street crossing. This is one that we talked about before. Both of these items will reduce our fund balance in the general fund. However, at this point, we're running ahead of schedule on our budget, so it may not affect us too much in our fund balance. The other items we have are all from the water fund. One of the big items in the operating section is $360,000 for additional water. We've been selling more water this year than expected, so this one will be also offset by additional revenue. We have a number of small projects here that will be either funded by the operating of the water fund or the impact fee fund, and there are adequate funds for these projects at this time. Any questions that you have on any of these items?
Thank you, Alan. This is on for a public hearing, so at this time I will open that hearing to the public. Anyone who would like to come forward and comment on this item? Seeing none, I'll accept a motion by council to close our public meeting.
I'll motion to close the public hearing.
Second.
The motion is second. Any discussion? Seeing none, we'll call for the vote. Nicole?
Yes.
Craig?
Yes.
Coralie?
Yes.
Jared?
Yes.
I'll vote yes. That closes our hearing. Any further discussion on this item? If none, I'll accept a resolution.
Mayor, I'll motion to approve resolution R06-2017, approving an amendment to the 2016-2017 fiscal year budget.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Seeing I'll just make a comment on the Hawk Signal, if I could. I mean, that's, I think it's a pretty big thing. I mean, I commented someone earlier today, it's kind of eye-popping number, $90,000 for a crosswalk. People sometimes think these are really small things, but really this is an issue that was brought to our attention by the public over there. We looked into it, and there's a big need there, and credit to staff, everyone, for working quickly to get it taken care of. And well, I believe, for just for the public knows, we're approving this night, but I believe that will be installed over the summer. So we're, even though it's there, we're budgeting for it now. It's not going in until after this school year. Instruct during the summer months.
Unless they can work something out with Salt Lake County.
Right.
Here.
It's actually, that's the other thing. It's done by Salt Lake County, the contract with them to get it done. So.
Okay. So we have a motion, a second. Let's call for the vote. Craig?
Yes.
Nicole?
Yes.
Coralie?
Yes.
Jared?
Yes.
And I'll vote yes. That motion carries. Thank you. Item six is our consent agenda. And if the council will allow me to I'd like to have a little more further discussion on item 6.5. And so if you would give me that opportunity to discuss these items a little more in specific terms, I would welcome a motion to move item 6.5 immediately after the consent agenda so that we can discuss it a little more in depth.
I'll make a motion to move 6.5 after the consent agenda.
I'll second.
Okay. Motion to second. Call for the What's that?
Okay, and along with that motion to approve the rest of the consent items on that agenda.
As written. And I'll second.
Okay, motion second. Jared?
Yes.
Nicole?
Yes.
Coralie?
Yes.
Craig?
Yes.
And I'll vote yes. Okay. Item 6.5, as I mentioned, anyone has, and before I start, does there anyone have any other items they wish to bring up? Okay. The only one I had, well, I've got a couple here. One of the items it talks about, employees shall reimburse city for expenses that are not in compliance with this policy. And so just was concerned a little bit about, we want to make certain that we do not use purchasing cards for personal use. And so is that in there? This is the travel, but I'm assuming if my concern, and I've served on a board that is under the microscope right now for this very issue, that an individual used a company purchasing card for personal use. And I know it says that they will they need to reimburse the city, but I would hope we'd have a little more teeth to say, you know what, under no circumstances are you to use them. So anyway, that's let's see, Alan, it's under the travel and business reimbursement policy, first page, under responsibility. I don't know how, and I'm open to counsel. If you feel like that's sufficient, then I'm okay with it too, but.
Well, it says that they can't use it for their own, but this is a clause that says if they do, they have to repay us.
So we do have a clause in here saying it's absolutely prohibited to use for personal use.
It's in the purchasing card or solicitation.
Okay. If it is, then I think
that.
Okay.
That just says that if they do use it, they have to pay us back. It also goes in a little further down that there could be disciplinary action as well.
Good. Okay.
I think this would be to cover us just in case there was an accidental, you know, you just happened to get the wrong card out and didn't even realize it until later.
And you know, that happens occasionally, not real often. We probably get 4 or 5 of them a year where mm-hmm. there's a mistake in the card that's used.
Right.
And it's always brought to our, the employees bring it to our attention first.
Alan, just below that, purchasing card rewards, one of the sentences reads, an employee using purchasing card rewards for personally. I'm thinking it's for personal use.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. And then down below the second page under reporting guidelines, and then there's one line that says, receipts must be itemized. Many restaurants and hotels give a total and an itemized period. I don't know if that means an itemized.
An itemized. Well, you go to a restaurant, they give you 2 receipts. One will be a total of the sale. One will say what you bought.
Right.
Okay, we've had a number of occasions over the past, and we've corrected this, where we only got the total. You don't know what's being purchased. So I need to correct the language there. But the point is, we need the itemized receipt, not the total. We need to know what was purchased. So that we know whether it's an approved expense. You know, you go down to the restaurant and spend $200 on lunch. If we only have a receipt that says $200, where second you have another receipt that shows that you bought 8 meals, it paints a different picture of what's happening.
Thank you. Then the other thing I had was down on the mileage reimbursement. It says established by the IRS rate for 2017. I was just wondering if we ought to change the wording on that to say the current mileage rate so that in subsequent years it's not just that rate. It would be based on the
current. We actually have a policy in our current policy that adjusts that every year, but that you're correct. That should say that it's whatever the current one is. It actually went down just a little bit this year.
Okay. That was
and
all
the
I
same,
had.
Same thing for the meals where it indicates GSA per diem for meals per, you know, 68 per day in 2017. Just drop off the reference to the current year and just leave it GSA per diem.
Okay.
That's all I had. Anyone else have any?
Yeah, I just had a quick question, Alan. In our work meetings, we discussed several times and for meals that if a meal is provided with the registration of a conference, that wouldn't be reimbursed, but I don't see that mentioned anywhere in there.
Okay, I might have missed it. That, but we do want that in the policy.
Always scan this section.
Say, I might have missed it, but.
Yeah. I'll look for it.
Alan, under the purchasing card use policy, I was looking to, under item 6D, it says the city manager's expenses will be signed by the city attorney and it was blank.
Okay.
We had agreed to have them.
I think we had you, didn't I? I think that should be city manager or city attorney and finance director.
Finance director.
Yep. That didn't get completed, apparently.
That's all I had. Anyone else?
Scouts, one of our jobs is just proofreading.
There's no other items. I'll accept a motion on this item with the changes that have been discussed.
I will motion to approve item 6.5, ratification of city policies with respect to travel and business expense reimbursement and purchase card use with the changes as noted in the discussion.
Second.
Okay. Motion and a second. Jared?
Yes.
Corley?
Yes.
Nicole?
Yes.
Craig?
Yes.
Yes, that motion carries. We'll now go on to item 7.1, discussion consideration of a proposed rezone of several properties to comply with the approved general plan. Gordon?
I think you're on to this.
No, you're fine.
The monitor is so we have somebody smarter than me working on it. So, this is the rezone we talked about in the work meeting. This includes a number of property owners and a number of different locations that are associated to properties that, since we adopted the new general plan, make these properties zoning in compliance with the general plan. We've contacted all the property owners. Most of them didn't really have much concern with it other than the MAC A property owners, which we talked with, or that they presented earlier today in the work meeting. So you kind of understand their visioning, what the kind of zoning they're looking for. They want to continue to work with the city and come up with a plan that would meet the requirements of the city. However, it would require us to modify the general plan to reflect some of the changes they're showing and keep similar zoning or residential zoning in this area. So if you have any questions for me, I'll try to answer them. The applicants here, we're the applicant actually, but people affected by the zone change are here as well.
Gordon, one of the things I wanted to mention, we've talked about this safety training facility. How would this impact?
So part of where we want that safety training facility is on part of the MAC 8 property. We've had fairly extensive discussions, and they've agreed as part of that five-point development agreement that they would hold open that property so we could purchase that for it's called the DDC, Disaster Discovery Center, but yes. So they're aware of that. They're comfortable including that in the property we can purchase from them, and we would include that in the development agreement. The council has the option to approve all or part of the rezone. So you don't have, it's not all or nothing. You can do it.
We could exclude this portion out and say we'll approve all the proposed rezone.
Other than the MAC 8 if you want to do that.
Now, just for clarification, there's one property that's listed, no, two that are listed as MAC 8. On our council packet, there were some parcel IDs listed 0 through 23, and we've got parcel 7 and 9, oh, I'm sorry, 7, 9, and 16. There are additional properties that are titled McDougal LLC. Are those also
those
part of this?
Those are Bobby also.
Okay.
So I thought they were all.
Is that right? So we have.
So those would be all the same motion.
Okay, so
we need to include those in.
4, 7, 9, 16, and 22 are the parcels from the council packet. Does
yes,
that sound
and then
right?
Just tell us to make two. If you wanted to exclude those, that you would, the ones owned by Gary McDougall, Gary McDougall and Ken Wilson. And then we would make sure we get those numbers. I think you're right.
Let me just say, I appreciated both of them coming in our work meeting. We spent an extensive amount of time on this, and we've had a lot of good discussions with them. I'm inclined that I appreciate their effort and would welcome an opportunity to continue discussions and perhaps consider to exclude these properties from this rezone, so that we could have further dialogue and see if we could come to some consensus. Because they've made a good effort, and I think they've moved into a position where I think we can try to find some synergy in terms of agreeing with what the city would like.
I think that we're not looking to exclude them so much as we are looking to continue this action for those specific parcels.
Right.
So it's not approving it or denying it, it's simply continuing just those.
Anyone else have a comment? Okay, I will accept a motion. Nobody wants to do it.
All right, I'll make a motion to approve ordinance number 2017-09, rezoning several properties located in Southeast Harriman. In order to comply with the general plan, with the exception of removing properties owned by MAC 8 as well as any properties as any properties owned by McDougal Olson that we have listed as parcels 4, 7, 9, 16, and 22 for further negotiation with those owners.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, we'll call for the vote. Craig?
Yes.
Nicole?
Yes.
Corley?
Yes.
Jared?
Yes.
And I'll vote yes. Okay, that motion carries. Okay. We'll go on to item 7.2, discussion consideration of a text change to the land use ordinance regarding accessory buildings. Sandra.
Okay, we recently made a change to our accessory buildings ordinance to make it more consistent across all zones. In doing so, we found where we had missed in our zones, our residential zones, where we do have some lots that are over a half acre where this would affect them. So we just need to make this change to the building height to say that the maximum height is 16 feet, except for on lots that are half acre or larger, it can go to 20 feet. We also have added that the planning commission or the planning staff can approve up to 25 feet if they increase their setbacks to 10 feet. And then we do have it added in here that all accessory buildings shall not exceed one story. So it's just to match all the other zones that we've already made this change to.
I had a couple of questions. Would you tell me, what is the current setback on those that could be up to 20 feet in height?
So say 5 feet. If there's a PUE, we request that they get their, you know, the sign off on it if they're...
Public utility easement for people that don't know PUE. Okay. So what is the rationale on going up an additional 5 feet in height to increase the setback that much, to double it essentially?
You're talking about the 25 feet?
To go from a 5 foot setback to a 10 foot setback when we're increasing a height.
I believe it came from the building department, was one of the requests, that it was something from them. Of the 10 feet because of the height, something with the building and the side of the, to the next property, increasing it to 10 feet doesn't like impact the next neighbor.
I guess I'm not sure what additional difference it would make for 5 feet of additional height to increase that. I'd love to understand it better, I guess, is what I'm saying. So
you're talking about why we say 10 feet from 5 feet to the 10 feet?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure why we've had that in the ordinance, to be honest with you.
Then the other question, and I noticed this is not an addition or a change, but in thinking of a garage, for example, you could have an accessory building or a garage that would be built, and 25 feet high would enable someone to have a loft, for example, inside that for storage purposes. I noticed that it says all accessory buildings shall not exceed one story. Would a loft of that type be permitted or not permitted?
Not permitted.
Not permitted. Again, can you help explain the rationale? If the space is available, I hesitate to restrict an owner to say you can't put a loft to store extra.
Because at that point in time, it comes to where it's like a living unit. People, we've had garages come in and request an additional level to be used as storage, but it comes out that it is going to be used as a secondary unit, and so that's why we've limited it to the one.
But we don't allow secondary units, right? That and that's restricted elsewhere. So to Coralie's point, it's not for us to judge in this particular use. We don't mind them having extra storage. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. If they choose to go against another ordinance, then, of course, we enforce that accordingly. But I don't think that in this accessory building that we ought to be judging what the use is going to be when, in fact, we have no problem with storage.
Right, right.
Yeah, if you would like us to change it, we can go back and revisit the ordinance and change it to allow... additional.
I think it's wise to make it so it's not too easy to make a second apartment, as it were, another dwelling unit. But I would hate to, if you're going to be building that large anyway, you'd want to maximize the storage. I think that's why most people build those accessory buildings, is to provide for the storage.
So well, can we not reiterate that it's not to be used for dwelling?
It could be.
Yeah, okay. I feel comfortable.
Yeah.
I think my preference would be to continue this and understand a little better the relationship between the 20 to 25 feet and the setbacks as they exist, and the setbacks that would be doubled, and then explore maybe some language that we could allow for storage purposes or something like that for a second story or a loft. but hopefully not open Pandora's box, because
right.
I think you make a
and
great
And you would
point.
Like us to look at this for all zones, correct?
And yes. I would think so. We'd want to do it to be consistent. Okay. But particularly because on the half acre or larger lots, which is what we're considering specifically, those properties are larger that they can accommodate these larger buildings, and I think we just need to look at those uses more.
Yeah, no problem.
So I'd like to have that conversation. Another question to consider for that is, I'm same thing, I'd like to understand the rationale of why we'd allow staff to add another 5 feet in height, what that difference is, why.
If they increase the setback. And again, that relationship between the setbacks
and the height.
I'd like to understand
even just, I mean, for me, even just the rationale of we're setting a limit of 20 feet and then saying that staff may approve 25 feet. Mm-hmm. Why? For what reason?
If they increase the setback. Yeah. So, thank you.
I think there's enough items. We ought to continue. I agree.
Sure. All right. I'll motion to continue Ordinance 2017-10, authorizing a text change to the land use ordinance regarding accessory buildings to a future meeting date and specified at this time.
Second.
Motion second. Call for vote. Jared?
Yes.
Corley?
Yes.
Nicole?
Yes.
Craig?
Yes.
I'll vote yes. And Sandra, did you get the items that we need to look at? Okay. Thank you. Okay, we'll go on to item 7.3, discussion consideration of a resolution approving the third amendment to the master development agreement for the South Hills Master Plan Community. John?
So this was presented to you at the last meeting. I was not there, so let me just give you a brief history. This is an old development agreement with DAI, if you remember that entity. It set the rules in the development agreement for basically procedure, but it also had in as an exhibit, pretty complicated or intense development standards, but it didn't have a procedure in it. So it was clunky. It's the old procedure, and so this amends it to bring it to a more current procedure to go to the subdivision process.
And I think the Planning Commission and the developer are both supportive of this because there's been so much question as to what comes first and what is the Planning Commission allowed to ask for, since so many issues are already contemplated or contractually obligated in the Master Development Agreement. So this very clearly lays out a policy. It's a good move.
Seeing none, I'll accept a motion.
I'll motion to approve Resolution R07-2017, approving the third amendment to the Master Development Agreement for the South Hills Master Planned Community.
Second.
Motion a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, we'll call for the vote. Nicole?
Yes.
Craig?
Yes.
Jared?
Yes.
Corley?
Yes.
And I'll vote yes. That motion carries. Going to item 7.4, discussion consideration of an interlocal cooperative agreement between Harriman City and Salt Lake County for the installation of a Hawk signal located at Anthem Park and 5600 West.
Blake? All right. So we already got the budget approved for this. So this is just the interlocal agreement with Salt Lake County to install the Hawk signal in front of Copper Mountain Middle School. As Councilman Henderson talked about, this was an item that was brought forth by residents, some concerns with safety in that area. We studied the area, looked at options. This looked like the most feasible option to accomplish what we needed to do. So this will provide a single pole on the east side of the road, and it's a Hawk signal, a high-intensity activated crosswalk beacon is what that stands for, and it will be button activated for the students or anybody else walking across the street to push the button, activate the signal to work like a traffic signal, and stop traffic and allow them safe passage across the road. The agreement is actually written for $73,000. That's the county's cost to do the materials and labor. There's an additional cost for us to bore conduits in through utilities and to connect power to the system. So $90,000 is the total amount on the request on this, but the locals for 73. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. If not, I recommend approval. Is that
Blake, the question I had was the annual maintenance. That's a city expense that will be mm-hmm. we pick up for
we
that.
We have an agreement with Salt Lake County to maintain the cabinet box. It's got an electrical cabinet that runs the brains of the system. And then they come over and they come out every year and check every signal cabinet, make sure that it's clean and make sure all the components are working properly. they blue stake when there's other construction activities in the area. They have to call in and mark the utilities in the area. So the county comes out and marks the conduits, and then that also covers the electrical costs around the signal.
And the other question I have, and I think I know the answer to this, in terms of the Jordan School District's participation, this light certainly benefits them, keeping the safety of the children crossing. Is there any financial commitment from them, or is that something that the city has to absorb?
There's no participation from them on this item. The signal will also be used for, there's an LDS church across the street that will allow people to move back and forth. And as we go forward in development, the trail system will run up through Midas Creek in that area. And there may be people that get off the trail that access neighborhoods on the other side of the road. So I think it'll be used, have a wide enough use that the school district would be it's used maybe 8 months out of the year for them, and then the other 4 months out of the year for summer break, 3-4 months out of the year, it's used by others.
So. And as the property continues to develop, of course, Athlos Charter School has the ability to use that as the sidewalks are installed or have been installed, and we'll have 4 schools serviced by that light, the high school, middle school, charter school, and elementary school, in addition to the church and trail system. So certainly an expensive item, but will be very well used.
One thing to note is for the safe walk routes for Athlos and the new elementary school, we're looking at having the students walk to the actual signal at the intersection of Harriman Parkway and putting the crossing guard there. We don't intend to have a crossing guard at this location.
That's good to know.
Both good points. I'll just make a comment for public consumption and understanding, I guess. It's one thing that just drives me insane is that the way our system works, schools, including charter schools, can locate wherever they want. We have no control over that whatsoever through zoning, planning, anything. They can put that school wherever, but we have to pay the cost for the crossing guards and safe passage, safe walking routes, etc. And it falls squarely on the city's shoulders. Second point the mayor brought up was the maintenance of not just this sort of light, but traffic signals in general. You mentioned the cost to install this, but I don't think you mentioned the actual maintenance cost. I think it was $1,000 a year just to maintain this one signal. So county's got a pretty good monopoly going on. But all those costs are borne by the city, not the school district. That doesn't come through your property taxes, anything like that. All of those things really come through the city's budget. So,
very good point. Also, Blake, I was just going to say too that we as a city had to have a criteria for that would give credence for these type of signals. Otherwise, we could open up the floodgates to everybody and say, "Hey, I want a Hawk light down by my area because our kids are crossing there." And the city could not financially do everyone. So I'm just saying, I think we ought to have some criteria that advocates for a light and why we would put a light in a certain area. And I know there's some visibility issues. It's a wide street. And so I hope in the future that we would have some criteria so that as others come saying we want a similar light, then we could say it needs to meet a certain criteria for justification of it.
I think we already have engineering in place for that.
There are criteria for school safe walk routes and actual school crossing locations. You go out and count the gaps and how much time there is for a gap, how many gaps there are. You pick the busiest 15 minutes. There's a whole criteria for that, and that's kind of what we were applying to this, but we were projecting because when we did the study for this, there were only a couple dozen houses on that side of the road. But we saw there were going to be more coming, so we projected out with how many kids were in those couple dozen houses into the full build-out and validated that the signal was more than that. So that's what we can look at is the number of kids crossing and how many safe gaps there are across the road. And the width of the road and the speed of the road are also a component of that.
So maybe to clarify, so we don't have a specific criteria for this type of signal that has to meet this, and this. We did do our homework and did apply those engineering standards and criteria for it. But at the same time, this isn't something that we as a council just decided, well, yeah, we we want one right there. Let's put it there. We did apply
it. It had to have criteria.
There's no national standard. We applied a similar standard to this for school walking crosswalks. So that's what we used. It's interesting you bring this up because in my engineering department staff meeting this morning, we discussed this exact thing, writing up a set criteria for hawk signals. So
yeah, Blake's been studying this area for almost a year. We had traffic counters out there that give us direction, time, speed, so we know exactly the car traffic is going along that road and the site problem, that curve, that road, the width of the road. The whole criteria that engineering goes through to make sure this is warranted. And to his credit, he looked at the future build-out area and says, yes, it does warrant it. I mean, that's what we pushed forward to council. Council gave us the agreement tonight to fund the budget amendment, so I appreciate that.
I just think as the city grows, it's just going to be important to have that so that we can approach situations that feel that light warrants it. So
all signals and signs are guided by, installation of them is guided by the MUTCD, the manual, Uniform Traffic Control Device manual book. And the hawk signal is under a temporary study in that book. It's not actually warranted yet. And when they get that all finalized, it'll be added in as an addendum to the book, and then we'll be able to use it. So I imagine in that standard, there will be an actual calculation you can do. And then we can adopt more strict standards if we're ordinance standards.
Good job, Blake.
I'm willing to make a motion on this if there's no more discussion. Make a motion to approve resolution R08-2017, approving an interlocal cooperative agreement with Salt Lake County for the installation of a crosswalk beacon located at Anthony Park at 5600 West.
Second.
Motion second. Let's call for the vote. Craig?
Yes.
Nicole?
Yes.
Carly?
Yes.
Jared?
Yes.
And I'll vote yes. That motion carries. Our final item tonight is 7.5, discussion consideration of interlocal cooperative agreement between Harriman City and Salt Lake County for the purchase of approximately 0.04 acres of property located at or near 7198 West Rose Canyon Road, Lake.
Okay. So there's
Does this need a hawk signal?
No. This one's only $10. So this is a product of a development that's going in up Rose Canyon Road. They were needing to install a water line in that road. And as they were doing some research, some property research, they found that there was a 200-foot-long section, about 20 feet wide, that was still owned by Salt Lake County. So we called the county, and we decided that an interlocal agreement with a quick claim deed on it, I guess is how it's working, would be the best way to convey the property to Harriman City. They didn't want it anymore, and we were going to want to own what we were maintaining. So this agreement is to change hands from the county to the city for $10 for a strip of property in the middle of Rose Canyon Road.
The quick claim may be the $10, but the actual minimum real estate fee is $150.
$150.
So I think it'll cost us, what, $160 with the title and the...
I've read a lot of deeds this week.
Blake, let me just ask you, too. There was an item on the Salt Lake County Treasurer, $356.15. Is that property tax that we will need to pay?
It was owned by the county. There shouldn't be.
It was in our packet. And so it's got 1996, 97, 98, 99, 2000, and the got property tax.
Good question for John.
Well, they've got it through a tax sale. I think it's still $150. That's how much taxes was up. That's how they got it.
That's how they got it. So we wouldn't have the liability of that. Okay, I will accept a motion.
A motion to approve resolution R09-2017, approving an interlocal cooperative agreement with Salt Lake County for the purchase of approximately 0.04 acres of real property located on or near 7198 West Rose Canyon Road.
Second.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second. Any discussion? Seeing none, we'll call for the vote. Nicole?
Yes.
Craig?
Yes.
Carly?
Yes.
Jared?
Yes.
And I'll vote yes. That motion carries. I'd like to bring everyone's attention to our future meetings. March 2nd is our next Planning Commission meeting here in this Building at 7 o'clock. March 8th is our next City Council work meeting at 5 and City Council meeting at 7. In advance, March 4th, we have the Harriman Live Talent Show at Fort Harriman Middle School at 7 p.m. It's always fun, and I encourage you to come and participate. So, seeing none, I'll accept a motion to adjourn and reconvene into our work meeting.
A motion to adjourn and move back into a work meeting.
Thank you, everybody. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.